Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. Your drive time show from 4 to 6, as always. And as always, again, we are here with another yet exciting topic. And today we are into energy. Yesterday we were into digital discussions, and that was digital sovereignty coming out of the EU with their transition from US big tech. That was more of a tug of war going on in between, basically the tech atmosphere in Europe and who is going to dominate it. Well, in today's discussion, we're taking a whole different angle that's more close to home, and it's more in the energy sphere of things. Dwight?
Helmut, I have to look at the alternative discussion we had regarding technologies phasing into also what we've got planned for today, primarily because what we've got planned for today is a discussion where actually all the theories and all the presentations and the PowerPoints and the pies in the skies that have been drawn for us Namibians, that we Namibians drawn for other Namibians. I'm talking about myself now. Apparently, now it's actually going to manifest. Now it's actually going to be anchored. It's going to be implemented and it's going to be rolled out. Hence the reason why I made the comment yesterday, in our discussion off air when we had one of our ad breaks. We will see the power to X producing synthetic fuels quicker than the first oil barrel popping up. And the first oil barrel, unfortunately, has got... Helmut, this week alone, we've had the Namibia International Oil and Gas Conference happening here in Windhoek. And then I came now to the office from another circular economy discussion. And I have to stress here, the first one I attended was, even though it was organized by NIPDB alongside the Finnish embassy in Namibia, the Namibian university that was present there was NUST. However, the circular economy engagement I came to from now today is something organized in conjunction with or in collaboration with UNAM. So we obviously see how Namibia's university is going to play a focal point and going to be central in terms of driving through new knowledge, because they already have those particular applications taking place. Here's the concern, Helmut. Namibia is hot property.
Oh yeah, it turns out
we are baked beans on toast in some cases.
Yeah. The example I would use would get us fired, but let me just go with the, from the look of things, investment wise, especially in the energy sector, Namibia is a hot property because we are constantly switching discussions in terms of energy investment into Namibia's energy sector in both oil and gas and green hydrogen. So you are looking at a significant amount of energy, of investments taking place in Namibia's both clean and non-clean energy.
Yeah.
And, which is why I always, I'm so thankful we didn't take, not just Namibia, but the whole continent. We didn't take the hard stance of energy transition that Europe took in the beginning of the energy transition discussion. Because they really went hardcore, which is why they were just shutting down, one coal power plant after another. So, with that the fact that the green energy, or more like renewable energy, renewable energy is still in its rudimentary stage, technological wise.
Mm.
So that's obviously brought in the energy mix as a part of the overall, energy transition discussion. And that's just not for the EU, but basically globally. One thing we have learned from the oil and gas, you know, one thing we have learned from not just oil and gas, but all forms of energy is that they took decades to perfect getting out as much energy output as possible. The same, you know, same with coal, same with crude oil.
Yeah.
So that means forms of energy like hydrogen, for example, and we have different categories of hydrogen, and they are color coded depending on the source that you use to produce the hydrogen. So you have a gray hydrogen where you are looking at a mix of renewable and non-renewable energy that's used to produce that particular hydrogen, and we have one that is more often at this point, it's well just incorporated in our national anthem, which is green hydrogen, which is produced using a renewable source of energy.
Mm.
So it's renewable all the way.
Mm.
Yeah. So now the thing is, we have a significant investment of foreign investment, which is from today's discussion, as you are going to, as we are going to point out, has a lot of local presence.
Yeah.
Yeah. In terms of players and involvement and basically inclusivity. That which I think is awesome. Now, but the thing is,
I know. Look, it's the aim, Helmut.
Dude, man,
to have the inclusivity.
I'm looking at the money and I'm going, yeah, there's no way we could have pulled this off.
No, there is. You are right. There is no way we could have pulled it off ourselves.
Yeah.
But you were still saying, Helmut. You were still saying.
Now, the thing is, when you look at you and I have gone through the industry baseline survey,
yeah,
coming out of the oil and gas industry, the baseline survey basically puts a production phase of the oil and gas industry somewhere 2034, 2035. We're talking about 9-10 years from now.
Yep.
Yeah, and the green hydrogen discussion, which is also also falls under the energy category, there's a significant investment taking place in both divisions of the energy sector in one country, and that's Namibia.
Mm.
So that's why I keep using the word tug of war going on here. First of all,
no, there's. No. The listeners are only hearing you mentioning it now.
Sorry. I just snitched on myself.
Yeah.
Now, there's some kind of an interesting tug of war going on here. And you have significant local presence local and foreign presence in both divisions, both oil and gas and green hydrogen. Now, today's discussion is based on green hydrogen, where if you have seen our poster, then we're basically, pointing at the fact that the green hydrogen guy seems to be making strides faster than oil and gas in terms of reaching their production phase.
They are.
Yeah.
And it's...
I think that's because they are on land, man. Just give the oil and gas.
Not just that, Helmut. Here's the thing, man. If we were searching for oil in the sea, yeah, and this is one of the things primarily when it comes to geology.
Mm-hmm.
If you are looking for something in our sea, especially a mineral that's underground, mm-hmm, you're making your life 5,000 times more difficult. For example, like with Namdeb and its offshore deep sea mining.
Yeah.
Why are we mining in the sea, on the seabed?
That's where the diamonds are, dude.
No, Helmut. Where was the first diamond found? In Namibia. On land.
Yeah.
Now.
Okay, aren't we mining that too?
Apparently no more. I say apparently because the last political discourse which I followed in Parliament 2 years back regarding that particular claim, because it was also based upon a land-linked, genocide-linked, colonialism-linked discourse platform. At that stage, it was still when the previous speaker, Kashivivi, was still the speaker.
Yeah.
And, sometimes the snowballs that were flying around in terms of the discourse between him and some of the opposition party members regarding... at that stage, it was still the court case that was brought against him and the National Assembly for stopping the debate about the joint declaration. And then, and then it kept creeping in, you know. One of the opposition party members kept highlighting this particular talking point, and then would talk about the Tsau Cape National Park, which is the, if you go look at it on the on our maps, it'll tell you it's the no man's land slash, the story I keep telling you, the place where you can't stop.
Sperrgebiet,
or as they say in German, Sperrgebiet. So Sperrgebiet is no man's land, literally. But its name got turned into a national park name. So now, in the particular broad discussion of things, yes, Hamid, you can say, the green hydrogen or the green hydrogen production program, has the benefit of the land, a resource that is very, very pivotal in economics. Not
easily accessible by most in comparison to having something 300 kilometers offshore.
Exactly. And you need a boat and you need to be able to be trained to swim in the very strong seas there in the Atlantic Ocean. So, once again, I ask you the question.
You just stick to a boat on this one.
I ask you a question. And there's actually a very famous scene, Hamid. I've never watched the series. The series is features Angelina Jolie's ex-husband, Billy Bob Thornton. It's known as Landman, and it's about oil. Where Billy Bob Thornton's character tells, what's the guy's name? He played in the Ocean's 11 and so on movies. Andy Garcia's character. He tells Andy Garcia's character, why do you want to go and fight through all the government regulations and environmental regulations just to go and do deep sea oil extraction? Why are you putting so much money at risk doing this activity where you can just come to my private farm where I've got 3, 4, 5 pumping, you know, active oil wells and still own land rights to expand in any direction? I'm just paraphrasing what the character said to Andy Garcia's character. So when you look at a scenario like that, Helmut, what that person inadvertently, also those two characters, tell you is that if you are looking for oil in national waters, offshore, then that should tell you there's oil on land. I'm just throwing that little bit of intriguing information right there into that space. And you know how much, and the whole basic question is just based upon, in many cases, about who gets enriched financially.
Mm-hmm.
Who owns the land right financially? And who, and if there is various kinds of political discussions to avoid.
Okay, you think it's doing it offshore is a part of avoiding the whole land negotiation discussion?
Not just that. Also, if the farmer is potentially a very rich person already, now you're going to enrich that person even further. But here's the thing, Helmut. In commercial activity, in commerce, you always go for the easiest option. This is not about any grand schemes of things. My dad even told me this because he worked in the mining sector. He just said, listen, you go there where you can go and get the thing quicker out of the ground. You don't go there where you're going to go and fight for life and walk around with all manner of PowerPoint presentations just to convince people, what are you doing 300 kilometers from the shoreline?
I believe if someone is going to spend $300 million on a survey, I think they considered all the risks.
Helmut, do you know what was one of the interesting things?
Because if they didn't, then that would make me smarter than them, which...
Do you know what's one of the other concerns?
Which would be weird because they have more money than me.
Back in the 20-teens, 2015, between 2013 to 2017, the Brazilians were exploring for oil right across Walvis Bay and Swakop.
Yeah.
But they were closer.
Offshore?
Across, offshore.
Okay.
So they were exploring offshore. Now, here's the big concern. So, why couldn't we allow them to do it on land? Because the Namib Desert is there, and that is a protected area with volatile, what you call it, fauna and flora ecosystems living there. Yes, it's a harsh and extreme environment, but then the other concern would have been, who do you enrich? Because there's definitely people living on land in the designated area you're potentially targeting. So why do we keep beating about the bush because the Nigerians are on land, very few of their oil wells are offshore, very few. But many of the oil wells were the first ones. Remember the one that started the civil war with the people in the Niger Delta? What was that group?
If that place is still
What was that group's name?
Crossfire.
Where Sani Abacha was he's responsible for the killing of many of the people of that specific ethnic group in Nigeria. But you know which group I'm talking about.
Yeah.
They were the ones that...
It's Sani Abacha, no.
If you throw Sani Abacha in there, it's...
I don't know any African who does it.
If it's not Sani Abacha in West Africa, then it's Idi Amin in East Africa.
And where did he get that scar that looks like one of those, Nazi Germany dual scar...
situation?
Yeah, in the face.
Could obviously just have been a piece of shrapnel helmet or a gunshot wound. Sometimes back then, the army surgery, because when you think about wounds caused by firearms, it's usually a discussion that you were shot with ammunition that was made to kill you, not made to maim you.
Of course, I think that the point of shooting someone is to help them arrange a meeting with their maker. But the point is...
No, you are fast-forwarding that meeting.
Oh, yeah, you are right. You are fast-forwarding the meeting.
You're pushing it up into the schedule.
So most of the oil in Nigeria is onshore.
Yeah. Now,
that's something that I never actually looked at. One thing that that's also bringing me up to, I don't know much of Angola's oil industry as to how much of their oil, do they have onshore and how much of it do they have offshore. One thing I know about Angola is that they have a significant offshore, and that's I think primarily because of the extended civil war that ran. Is it from 1975 to 2002?
For the Nigerians, it's between 40% to 60% of it.
Is
their daily oil production?
Is that
onshore
or offshore?
Onshore.
40%
So we can on app we can put it at 50.
It's more of a 50-50 split.
Yeah.
So,
which in effect, Helmut, is convincing enough because it has to speak towards infrastructure that you've got to install and bring to the shore. The one report I watched, which was a documentary about why have Africans not adopted gas, natural gas, whether it be LNG or methane, but the saying or the wisdom that exists from the geologists is if you find gas, you find oil. If you find oil, you find the gas. The oil might not be the same oil, which is the other economic theory which the guy Steve Keen had debunked. Steve Keen is an academic economist. He says he hates it when economists homogenize specifically certain particular commodities like oil. Because we all thought, now that 3 January happened with Maduro, that suddenly there will be this influx of oil happening. No. Besides the American oil majors saying, hello, no, we won't put ourselves at risk because you just came and kidnapped, the other Americans just came and kidnapped someone's national leader. Now that whole country hates everything American. That whole country now hates everything American. Even though things might be cool, Helmut, even though the picture looks cool right now, have you not noticed that no one from America has tried to go to Venezuela to go and assess and understand what's the feeling on the ground?
Yeah, I wouldn't do that either.
So the concerns out there is how are you going to still get the oil? Now, what Steve Keen explained specifically was, because of Hormuz's explanation was, the thing that I explained to you yesterday after our show is that apparently the oil in the Middle East between Iran, Saudi Arabia, the other Emirati kingdoms, is that apparently that oil is fluid-like, almost water-like.
So the best one is the one with a high viscosity.
The one flowing a lot. The one more fluid.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that you will need different infrastructure, processing infrastructure.
Yeah.
Between, for example, South America and the Middle East. So now, you can imagine the same thing potentially also between Namibia potentially or Angola and Nigeria. the manufacturing processing methods, which has been some of the conversations that people were asking always here on air when, you know, when the callers used to call, our callers used to call in and say, what's wrong with Angola? Well, here's the thing. You're driving a car that requires a certain octane, and Angola produces a certain octane of a petrol.
They have different refining standards.
Well, if you say refining standards, let's rather say processing methods or infrastructure or machinery. So potentially, and have, if you've not seen that some of the cars that the Angolans drive here to Namibia, some of the cars are actually, you know, that it's, if it's not a diesel engine, then it's a car that you will have to look at the exhaust, the you know, the color of the fume. Sometimes if they come here with the oil cylinder, with that fuel cylinder, their tank, it burns a white smoke. Literally a white smoke. Now that obviously means it's something mechanical in the car that doesn't like this fuel that you're putting in.
So this, it's about the chemical makeup.
That too, because obviously chemicals are thrown into your fuel for the role that it plays in the decarbonization discussion of our economies. And it's also a scenario about what happens to the engine for you using this fuel. Now, yes, many Namibians love saying "is fuel is fuel." Yeah, if you had the diesel engines, sure, you could argue that way. If you had a diesel engine, you could argue that way. But if you've got the rest of us who are the fuel injection petrol guys, you are just shortening the lifespan of your engine, basically. In some cases, the lifespan of an engine is supposed to be 400,000. There's an Australian uncle there in Australia who drove his the same old Toyota station wagon that he's owned since the 1980s. He's apparently the first guy that's clocked up 1,000,000 kilometers on the engine. The only thing he replaced on it was apparently it was either his clutch or it was something in the gearbox, but he's been driving the car. So there's very few examples of product lifespan for a car and a petrol engine living or existing so long.
Yeah, but all that discussion spills into the manufacturing discussion, not just for Angola and Namibia, but again, the whole continent, because, first of all, most countries that do not have oil, like Namibia, like the refined one that they are just refining themselves.
It's Angola that's got majority of its...
Offshore.
Onshore. Angola is apparently between 75 to 90%.
Onshore.
Onshore production.
What have they been doing? Civil war, just put it on offshore. It's much better to survive.
Now, look,
the thing is, most of the machines take cars, for example, that are imported.
Yeah.
They are coming with different standards with regards to what fuel they take or what oil or what, basically their maintenance methods. And not just maintenance, but also operating methods. So that means if you just adopt any type of fuel, you are most likely going to run into problems. Okay, so different types. Now, the two main category that I learned about crude oil because of 3 January is heavy and light fuel.
Mm.
Heavy and light crude oil. And I didn't look much into it, but now that you pointed out the viscosity, I have, I think it has something to do with the viscosity. That's the ability to flow.
Mm.
Yeah. Now, if you look at oil and water, for example, they have different viscosity. Cooking oil flows much slower than water.
So, and cooking oil also, depending on the volume of water, it's more prone to float, but sometimes it does form.
It's just that's when density now comes into play.
Yeah.
But the thing is, so that means every refinery is most likely going to be built to refine a specific type of crude oil. You can't just throw in any.
Yeah. You cannot just go and say, okay, I'll ship my Tanzanian oil around the Southern African trip to Angola. Angola refine. Now the Angola.
Unless you have the same fuel grade of some sort or whatever standard they use in measuring that.
Yeah. And in between, Helmut, what I've realized is also that a lot of politics comes into play specifically around oil.
Yeah.
So we are, for example, this past week, two particular key events popped up. The one that I went to on Monday, which was the hydrogen ramp up engagement. It was a signature between GIZ and the hyphen and its parent company, Enertrak South Africa, because there's Enertrak Germany that owns Enertrak South Africa. Enertrak South Africa owns hyphen South Africa and hyphen Namibia.
Just showing you subsidiaries.
Just showing you the linkage. But the Enertrak Germany guys were here in Namibia when Robert Habeck, the vice chancellor and the vice chancellor of Germany and the minister of economic development and something, and energy, something. That's his ministry's name. They've got a ministry of energy. Mm-hmm. And then they've got this ministry of economic development and energy in Germany. Oh, but the one
dedicated to solely energy.
Okay, it's like a combination role, because if you try to understand how what kind of a government do you need that needs to govern 80 million people in Europe, and try to think for yourself also what kind of a government do you need to govern 250 million people like Nigeria, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, your government is going to be big. You're going to have many ministries.
Yeah.
And you're going to have a lot of chains of command and communication to actually provide service on the ground. Or try to imagine to yourself, what's the size of a government that you need for India and China? A billion plus each.
You need one heck of a... Have you seen their parliaments?
Hamut, they've got a parliament in the province. Besides the federal parliament or the national parliament, they've got a parliament per province. South Africa just has 60 million people now. South Africa has a provincial government.
Yeah.
Provincial government. We say local authority and regional and regional.
We're just 3 million.
And regional council. Yeah, give us another 50 years, yeah. Or 100 years. But anyway, so getting back on point, The core concern was here. Together in this week, I went to three events. Okay, I went to two events, observed one digitally. And all three of them are speaking in three different directions.
And they're all in the energy sector.
And they're all to do with energy, and they're all to do with economic development, and one of them was attended by the president. So two of them actually gives us the best case scenario of achieving economic development a lot quicker. But we've spoken about the one. We've spoken about both of them, actually. And the one is featuring into the next level that we're going to look at. Because we tried thinking, okay, power to X, okay, they're looking at positioning certain things. Certain things are already happening on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
We can envisage a situation. Remember the biomass guy explaining how an encroacher bush would factor into providing the necessary means to generate the production method used to capture or to generate the ammonia or the green hydrogen.
Okay.
That's now for that power plant that NamPower is building, the Oshikoto power plant on the other side of Tsumeb. Now they spoke of three methods of production. That's now to produce the green hydrogen and the ammonia, in that particular discussion that we looked at, the Power to X conference discussion. Now you get to the circular economy once again, and it has a component where it can produce green hydrogen and ammonia as well. And then thirdly, we are now seeing in this particular week how, yes, German-related entities are saying, yeah, we are moving slowly but surely, silently but deadly, yeah, ahead with rolling out the fuel of the future. Because it is the fuel of the future, guys. We have to recognize this, specifically, Helmut, because and for now I'm going to ignore completely anything to do with the law, environmental law, mining law, economic development laws, all that. I'm going to ignore that for now for today's discussion, focusing primarily on what's happening in front of us. And it is scary. I said back in 2021. When President Geingob came back from the UN and General Assembly, he said, hey guys, we're going to launch the green hydrogen program. And everyone in Namibia was like, what are we doing?
Green what?
A green hydrogen, guys. It's the new thing. It's the new fuel. New kid on the block. In 5 years, Helmut, we're at the phase where implementation is a fingertip away. A fingertip away. And it's not Namibians installing things. It's those that have a plan for us.
Yeah.
I've got to say it that way. They've got a plan for us. I mean...
Okay, from the look of things, now that you brought up the whole plants discussion, from what I gather in just energy, in energy,
yeah,
we have the Germans, the EU, the well, the South Koreans, with the you know, although the South Koreans have emphasized their interest more in the shipping industry,
but they are also in the green hydrogen because they're gonna buy our green hydrogen
energy.
Yeah, they're gonna buy our green hydrogen.
Our
yes. That's most one of the offtake agreements that they signed, them in Japan.
So I'm saying, is it our or German?
Look, it's going to look on the trade statistics. Mm-hmm. You know that discussion we had back on Monday about the trade statistics. So it's going to say on the trade statistics spreadsheet there with the Namibia Statistics Agency's guys. It's going to say green hydrogen, Namibia is selling green hydrogen.
Uh-huh.
It's going to say that. Namibia mm-hmm. is selling it. The money is...
It's moving from, you know...
From Korea.
From Seoul to...
To Windhoek. Yeah. And then it flies back to Johannesburg. And then from Johannesburg, it flies to Berlin. You know, it's going to be a quick transaction. I mean, it's going to be... It's like someone copy and pasting. You know? Have you ever seen those guys that use copy and paste on the keyboard? Yeah. Control-C, Control-V.
Yeah.
It's just going to be that the whole time. Control-C, Control-V. So, it's going to take its 5 days of clearance from Seoul to Windhoek.
Mm-hmm.
5 days of clearance because it was an international transfer.
Yeah.
And somewhere in between, someone has to come back from leave and then they go say, oh, yes, yes, I forgot to clear this payment. And it gets cleared. And the moment you press the enter button, it's Control-C, Control-V. And then Control-C, Control-V in Johannesburg.
To Berlin.
And then Berlin says, well, you know what? Thank you, guys. You know, it was lovely doing business. I expect next week's payment again. And that's what it's going to look like.
Yeah, I know. But the thing is, one thing that was pointed out in the discussion of the signing of the next phase between Namibia and GIZ.
Not Namibia.
For the first time.
Not Namibia.
Wait, who is that?
sorry. It's Germany to Germany.
Yeah. You just had to ruin my point.
It's not Namibia. It's Germany to Germany. Hey. And guess when it was signed?
Monday.
No, this was
Mandy a just the formality.
Yes, the actual planning.
Agreement.
Actual planning, mm-hmm. actual emphasis on this discussion began in 2021. The document I sent you is dated 2021. Before our president even flew to the General Assembly that September.
Dude, the point I'm trying to make is why the man, you know, why the, you know, the control C, control V. Yeah. From, you know, from South Korea to Windhoek.
Mm.
And.
Final destination, yeah, Berlin.
No, I just remembered why that name sounds familiar. They have an eating establishment here with the same name.
Who?
With the, you know, Korean capital city, you know, capital
oh,
city.
Oh, you're
name.
Talking about the Korean fast food place.
Yeah.
At the village.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is, control C, control V, you know, why, you know, from Windhoek to Jobek and Berlin.
Mm.
Let's just focus on the first two destinations. It's coming from South Korea to this is the payments now.
Mm.
The goal is to make sure that at least a few cents of it stays in Namibia. Before the large chunk of it goes to Berlin. Now, how are these few cents going to Namibian? I mean, local content participants are gonna murder me after this. Now,
yeah, they'll get their salaries. They'll get their contracts paid in Hendrik Witbooi's.
The participation.
It'll be paid in Hendrik Witbooi's, Helmut.
Yeah,
you know, now, it'll be flowing. In our money.
Now, one of the green hydrogen initiative taking place in Namibia is clean energy. Clean energy solutions?
Mm.
Now, one thing that they emphasize on their website is a key element of the hydrogen dune is technology exchange, exemplified by the establishment of the Hydrogen Academy site. And this clean energy solution blah, blah, but the most important thing is with joyful upskilling Namibians on hydrogen and diverse economic potential. That's the part where I'm seeing that control V, control C for copy.
Yeah.
I think it's going to start with a control A. Because nothing is remaining. Let's start with, let's stick to yours. Because that one will be more depressing.
Look, if you were cutting it, it would have been control X.
Yeah. Now, control C, you are copying, and then control V. They say, my point is there will be a little bit of editing that will take place.
Of course.
Before everything goes well through Jobbik to Berlin because of this local involvement that is being prioritized in this next phase.
The concern here
especially the entrepreneurs.
The concern here, isn't it? Yeah. What I see, because of hydrogen's abundance, Namibia will make so much money. I'll say it again. There will be so much money just made from this manufacturing process. There's no digging a hole anywhere. There's no leaving unrehabilitated mining sites anywhere else. Yeah, we'll still have the other conventional mining. There will be so much money that literally we will have more workforce working in green hydrogen than we will have people wanting to work in, let's say, in law or in the banking sector.
Oil and gas.
Or not just, or even oil and gas, because here, what I discovered with the, you remember when we did the youth in green hydrogen last year, I specifically asked the guy that the guy that was an engineer that was trained, that went for further training to wasn't Berlin, did he go to Stuttgart? When I asked him, in his eyes as an engineer, what does he see? Is this extraction or is this manufacturing? He confirmed the manufacturing, even though I knew the answer. And then he explained by expanding that many people still compare this thing to mining.
Yeah.
It's not mining. It's going to be clean. However, it is going to need a lot of technically trained Namibians.
Is that, that's the same gentleman that said, especially with regards to the skills, but that we have to up our technical expertise, or more like technical skills.
Yeah. And then his buddy, the guy that was the welder that said that the Namibian VTCs or TVET training centers all ended level 5. Now they've got to ramp it up from 6, 7, 8, or it ends at level 4. Now they've got to ramp them up and increase skills and knowledge from 5 to 7 and 5 to 8. So what the biggest question here is, Hamoud, if you continuously train people at such a higher level there, you can have factories for cars. Then we can go back to Peugeot.
Oh boy.
And we can go and tell Peugeot, come and make your green hydrogen engine or your green hydrogen car here with us, because we've got people who are trained at level 7, level 8 of the welding and manufacturing capabilities. You can do that. Now we've got more skilled people. But it then resonates with the other statement that we did, that I highlighted to you from the circular economy discussion, that from the Finnish talking point was, I can't remember if it was the guy from the EU or the guy from Finland, with one of them said, but we've got to sort out Namibia's basic education levels, Samuel. We've got to deal. No, the World Cup knockout thing. This bleeding young people at grade 10. It's an idiotic. I'm going to say it right now. I don't know why it was launched when I was grade 10 in 2000.
Yeah, because that raises a very big question. Where do you want them to go?
Because it just proliferates crime, unemployment, bad decision making by young people who don't have furthermore guidance, and it creates social ills. Now, if everyone has been complaining about social ills, Hamoud, what is the biggest cause of this? Well, you go and find out from their parents. My kid could not pass grade 10 because he failed or she failed. Now they're at home. By the age of 18, they've got 3 children already. Or
at 18?
I'd say an example, Hamoud. If it's a boy, by age 18, he's been in jail twice already for criminal activities. So we're not solving the basics, but we're already fixing the advanced levels. We should have invested on the basics.
Start with the foundation.
Start with the foundations. Sort out the foundations. Where have you heard in the world? Even people who work in the education sector of Namibia who are foreigners don't understand this basic education levels of us. They don't know where you play World Cup knockout football in grade 10. They don't know this. Not even the South Africans do it. How many South Africans have grade 12 passing rates of like 30%? 30%, Hutersa.
30% passing rate, where the rest going?
They reached grade 12. What must they care? They reached grade 12. However, you don't hear from the South Africans, they flushed out a whole bunch of people in grade 10. No. You don't hear that. For some reason, Namibia is playing here dice with a very small population that we can upskill and upgrade and, you know, uplift. We are playing Russian roulette with them, with their lives.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we've got the German partners and the EU partners asking us, so why are you bleeding so many young people in basic education? Why is your rate of absorption into your universities so low?
And we have, we are concerned about youth unemployment on one angle.
Exactly. Now we've got to have bridging courses. I said this last year. Do you know how embarrassing it was for me coming out of an Afrikaans speaking house?
Yeah.
When you hear that someone's kid had to do a bridging course.
Yeah.
At a university to get into the expected field she wanted. The university assessed you and said you're not good enough, but we will have mercy on you. Please, do this 1 year, this advanced year, this pre-year. It's like going to pre-primary all over again for university.
Yeah.
Do this year to upskill to this level.
Okay, one thing I've realized with regards to this, Namibia to Germany, or as you put it, Germany to Germany, a step up in the green hydrogen, Namibia's green hydrogen initiative is. What's the second name of that gentleman that gave, mention of what GIZ stands for? And everyone went like...
Oh, the country director. Country manager.
Yeah.
Tobias Gerster.
That last part is the one
It's just Gerster, Helmut. You can say it with a rah-rah, you know? Gerster.
Yeah, with a rah-rah. Now, one thing that pointed out was, the emphasis on entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
Yeah. The emphasis on entrepreneurs and basically local participation, because you don't want to be left behind. I mean, that's a good thing. But you have this energy initiative that wants to get, locals involved as much as possible in its initiatives. But then the requirements, the qualifications that are needed, like you just pointed out, you need a level 6 or at least 7. That means that spills into the Ministry of Education discussion. How do you then make sure that for the massive initiatives that is taking place in your country, to build the right qualification that matches the requirement that industry wants?
Mm.
If you look at the comparison here, again, you pointed out, that what that other gentleman pointed out, that green hydrogen is manufacturing, not extractive. So the point is, I'm constantly comparing it with oil and gas. And one thing where I see, in terms of employment and opportunity creation, where green hydrogen is going to basically, is going to win the trophy already. Well, basically have already won the trophy is the part of, one, the processing is taking place here. Now to do the same thing.
With oil.
To do the same thing with oil, you will need a refinery, which we don't have.
So Namibia is not going to flaunt its environmental laws for that refinery.
Yeah. And even if you were to decide to we're going to build a refinery and refine the oil here, that will take even longer for you to build that piece of infrastructure, because depending on the size, I've seen pictures of refineries coming out of the Middle East now that they are being bombed to smithereens.
Mm.
That thing is the size of a village.
I mean, Helmut, then we've got the other...
It's one sophisticated piece of infrastructure. So even if you were to build it, it will take longer
Yeah.
So when it comes to local content participation, green hydrogen, or more like, yeah, the Green Hydrogen Initiative is going to, it's killing it here.
No, it is.
In comparison.
No, it is.
For one, it's onshore. Oil and gas, offshore.
For two,
there's no pollution. Problem.
Okay, if there is pollution, if there is a carbon footprint, ne? Mm-hmm. It's through electricity usage. But
yeah,
in much of the scenarios that we've seen in the program, at the various phases, is that they are self-sustainable in terms of where they get their energy from. What we've got a concern with, which is Namibia, we have nationally determined contributions that we went and pledged to the UN, the UN Climate Change Forum, the one where you go and submit your NDCs. Namibia is also part of the desertification conference of parties, which is taking place later this year.
The 2015 Paris Agreement.
Namibia is part of the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change.
Yeah.
Now, we are part of all those things which are UN-affiliated agencies. And all of them have a treaty or multiple treaties, one treaty building on another treaty. All of those things, Helmut, Namibia went and said yes. However, when I asked Minister Alwendo, when he was still Minister of Mines and Energy back in 2022, when the first noise about the oil exploration came about, because it was within 1 week that Shell and Total announced that they are exploring and put the potential is there and things look promising. So, way back in 2022, then the Russia-Ukraine conflict starts off. Then I asked specifically, because it was also once again televised there from State House, why did we announce back in 2021 about green hydrogen? You know, why aren't we literally, you know, when you look after a newborn baby, you give them the nappies, when they cry and they look like they're going to cry, you go and wipe the bum and you make sure they're clean and comfortable. When it sounds like they're about to sound hungry, you know, there's going to be another cry that's a hunger cry. You smack the bottle into their mouth and you tell them, here, as long as you don't cry. Why didn't we put our efforts, not our money, just our efforts as Namibia?
Yeah, we're very good at putting our efforts and money, not much.
So, but why didn't we put our concerted efforts and stand by a particular initiative, which both meets our pledges at international platforms for green, for you know, being carbon neutral or being carbon, being a carbonless economy like Namibia, and then we start entertaining the oil majors.
Here's the thing that I think you are missing here, Dwight. You understand the commercial world better than I do. My conclusion...
It depends on which sphere, brah. I have to be honest. It depends on which sphere. Because if it's consumer, it's pretty easy for me. But the moment it gets to business, there's a lot of hidden elements and variables that you start wondering, is this not the person influencing the thing?
You're just making my point here, because I didn't know that until you pointed it out.
Because in many cases, the transaction looks simple. For example, like the gas to power.
Yeah.
Why have we still not done gas to power, Helmut? Namibia would have been an exporter
of natural gas
par excellence into the SADC power pool. Namibia would have had a new resource that it's exporting, electricity. But for some reason, gas to power has still not come online.
I'm about to, you know, point at what, you know, my sneaky suspicion on the reasons.
Yeah.
If you look at both sectors, which is seeing a lot of investment, thankfully, you know, just in the energy sector, that's crude oil and green hydrogen. They both require a significant amount of financial power.
Yeah.
Which is why you are seeing a lot of foreign presence. Germany mostly dominating the green hydrogen sphere, and the oil and gas, even you know, has the Qatari. You have Total is French.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, now you have Exxon Mobil, which is American, and you have BP. Well, that's in the name. BP, British Petroleum, Anglo-Iranian, and you end up with the Strait of Hormuz problem.
Then you've got the Brazilians and the Portuguese.
Yeah.
The Italians and the Spanish also have oil companies.
The Portuguese. Yeah, thank you very much. Now, you have all these guys that basically brought their money. The only thing we have is, for the most part, like, the only thing that we can flex at this point is, it's our land and the resources.
It's our sea.
The resources is on our land, or it's, under the sea again. Basically our land. But the financial, muscles behind it all, we don't have a lot of decisions to make in that direction.
No, we do.
How?
I just gave his answer at the start of the
story. Which is?
If there is oil out there in the sea,
uh-huh,
the opposite exists on land.
Well, you have the guys. How do you explain just someone spending, at this point, billions of dollars, making their lives and their life a nightmare 300 kilometers offshore when they can just get it onshore?
Because the government can control it offshore.
So you think it's a way of dodging responsibility of some sort?
Yes, because onshore, Helmut. Yes, I know people from the south, and they have said there is oil in the south. There's definitely not oil there in your region, there where the other exploration is going on, because that is Angola's oil, and where that exploration was hanging was going to be potentially closer to Botswana. Zambia.
Yeah, throw Botswana.
Zambia would have found the oil by now. Zambia didn't find the oil. Why do you think Zambia is heavy just on copper and on selling electricity, the hydroelectric power?
Yeah.
So Zambia would have found the oil as well. So we also have to identify actions, not what someone is writing for you in a report. Look at the actions. Hamoud, 5 years, we're now in year six. 6 years later from COVID, not a drop of oil has come from the north of Namibia.
I had a little faith in that until Mr. Shobon, with his guide to Namibian economy, pointed out one very awesome explainer, which is stuck in my head to this day. When it comes to these exploration discussions, it doesn't matter if it's coming from the corporate side or the political side. Take it with a pinch of salt.
No. That discussion, you should have taken it with a whole tanker of salt that Namibia is selling to the U.S.
in Nigeria.
Because up until now, if it was onshore, that time frame should have beaten this offshore time frame.
Yeah.
Here with the offshore, they're trying to reinvent the physics, the rules of physics, or the laws on physics. Because you've got to go 3 kilometers below the sea, which is going to be deep sea extraction.
I don't think so, man, because these guys have been been extracting oil in the North Sea.
Yeah,
the most violent part of, some of the most violent parts of the ocean is in the North Sea.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure they can get in.
But if you go look.
It's violent, I know, but I don't think it's the Atlantic Ocean is violent compared to the North Sea.
If you go look at where in the North Sea.
Yeah.
Because Norway and Scotland are the two North Sea guys.
Yeah.
Né? If you go look at where, you'll realize how close they are to their shorelines.
Oh.
If you come to Namibia. It's literally in a shipping lane neighborhood, Helmut. It's either you are in Namibia's national waters, or you're just outside of Namibia's national waters.
You're about to be in international waters.
But you are shipping, that is like a general traffic lane, basically, that exists there.
Mm-hmm.
Now you ask yourself the second question. If the South Africans didn't find oil this side of the border, just below it, do you think the South Africans would not have found it if there was oil? The South Africans would have already extracted, and that would have been across Port Nolloth and the other town that I know of, Vredendal, that I still want to go see. It would have been directly across them, just below the border where Namibia and South Africa's national waters border on each other. So what makes this particular neighborhood so enterprising?
Wait, isn't South Africa also exploring offshore?
Yeah, but that was opposite Port Elizabeth.
Yeah, yeah.
which Shell has now pulled out of South Africa because the environmental lobby groups in South Africa lobbied against it.
Making it a nightmare for them.
Because they were going to explore, and literally there is oil there where the South Africa, where Shell was going to go and explore.
Yeah.
There is oil. The concern was they were going to explore Helmut in literally where South Africa's fishing sector goes and fishes.
Brings us back to the is it to the mining and environment discussion here in Namibia.
Exactly.
Of you know what happens if you find some rare earth metal, some kind of precious lucrative minerals at a site that is a UNESCO heritage site, for example.
/ protected fauna and flora.
Oh, well, we'll
smash down that mountain. Well, you can still look on your left hand side to the wonderful zebra galloping or gallivanting right there somewhere.
I like that report.
No, it was a policy. It was a policy document.
Everything is a report to me at this point.
But here's the concern that also pops up, Helmut. And this is where things get tricky. This is where things get dubious. Now, I've tried collecting the reports from Total Global and Shell Global's particular noise that they make to their board members and to their investors and their board of directors and those people over there, which we don't hear this side. You don't hear it this side.
Mm-hmm.
I've tried to make sense. And then as you sit there thinking, like what we always, because we know critical thinking in Namibian communities, you know, if someone just continues to hype something too much, you start becoming suspicious.
Yeah, definitely.
If someone hypes a thing too much, it becomes suspicious. Because here's the thing that Namibians are probably already experiencing. We are definitely already experiencing fatigue regarding oil and gas. Because with that baseline survey report, which puts everything at 10 years from now, which is 9 years, like you cited, 9 years from now, why are we hyping up something? So we are deliberately going to stumble, run, fall, roll, do cartwheels, and even do somersaults literally into the Dutch curse.
Okay, why are we hyping? I think, and this is just my answer to that very awesome question. Back to Mr. Shebon's guide to the Namibian economy. Take it with a pinch of salt.
And when we do the oil and gas discussion, because we've got to wait for it to end, when we do it, Helmut, I'll bet you $10. Actually, let's make a bet here right on air. I'll bet you $100 at the end of this month. Nothing new came out from that thing.
Oil and gas?
Yeah. I'll bet you $100 now. Nothing new, which we don't know for the past 4 years, came out of that thing. No tangible agreement. No actual export. Zero.
Export? Well, it's gonna take another 9 years.
Exactly.
Well.
Exactly. So, what are we doing?
First of all, investors came with a whole lot of money.
Oh no, they came for the sun and they want to fly here to Etosha. They didn't come for Ventugam. Definitely.
You and I know that most of these visitors are coming for double the reason. One guy came from Switzerland and was caught in COVID-19, fell in love, now he's stuck in Namibia. And
you're still citing that angle.
Absolutely. Look, he didn't have to explain that. All he had to do was ask the question.
No, homeboy was just, he was bouncing between Namibia and South Africa because he had two, like, acquaintances with him.
Yeah.
I thought it was his sons. And until he said, no, me and my two colleagues, I'm like, huh? You look more like their boss if it's going to be that kind of a professional relationship. Because that's how young those two guys were. They were literally like, last year they were 18, this year they're 21.
Work hard, play hard. That's what I took from that guy. Now, look, first of all, the resources, this is a dilemma that a lot of basically developed countries are facing, which also throws basically everything about, security, sovereignty and governance into question. Every country in a developing category has a, this pressure to basically ramp up its infrastructure to offer the best, services to its people. And most, if not all, these countries don't have the money to build the infrastructure that's needed for the required goods and services. So, but then outside the borders, you have a lot of guys with a lot of money, most of them old money, that want to invest in whatever resources that they see fit in a country. Now, if you are desperate for the infrastructure, I'm shamelessly going to go with the word desperate because that's what it's beginning to spell. And one thing that we see is, okay, we have the resources and someone showed interest in investing that resources in this case, oil. And we just looked at other countries that did not fall in the Dutch case disease. We're just looking at the bright side here, which is why we invited the Norwegians.
And the Norwegians kept telling us, don't you do what we did.
Don't you do what we did.
But it sounds like we are exactly.
The whole African is already there forget oil and gas, with basically all the resources.
Yeah.
If anything, God forbid, anything happens to the extractive industry, this whole continent is toast.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, the thing is, we have the resources. Investors showed up and they were interested in the resources. We're like, we just signed a bunch of agreements about energy transition, but with that amount of money, oh, please, where do I sign? And well, the Green Hydrogen Initiative shows up and we're just saying yes, 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 yes to everything. And, one guy, think that was, Dudley, right? A whole cartoon about, this was during the, Hague's administration, our oil and, oil and gas and green hydrogen, economic initiatives. And the term he used in that cartoon was paying Peter to pay Paul. Robbing Peter to pay Paul.
Mm.
Yeah. Because of how contradictory these initiatives are with the overall discussion of energy transition.
Yep.
Until the whole, which is why I really appreciate the whole energy mix discussion, because that gives us an excellent excuse to invest both all at the same time. Because then say,
I love that word that you've been using since last week, Hamoud.
Mm-hmm.
The energy mix.
And not just that. And if you look at who are making, in terms of private companies that are investing in both initiatives, both green hydrogen and oil and gas in Namibia, but the countries of origin, you have the French, and you have the Americans.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you have BP, that's the British.
Yeah.
So, you have the very same guys that are at the top of energy transition discussion and also having significant presence in oil and gas investment.
Yep.
Now, at this point, even if I was in charge of this very wonderful Namibia festival, that would be a terrible idea. Just an example. If I was in charge of this, I would be just looking at where are these investors coming from. They are coming from the very same countries that are pioneering the energy transition discussion and the climate change discussion. So if they're the very same guys that are telling me about climate change and energy transition and they're coming to invest in the resources that's in my country that's counter climate change and energy transition discussion, I'm not going to stop you. I'll just say, just give me the money and give me a piece of paper where to sign.
Be that as may, Hamoud.
Have your own money.
Exactly. I wanted to add with that particular connecting point.
Someone's idea was not. It's important in a relationship to have your own money to avoid unnecessary sex. I think we should go for break.
Okay, we'll quickly take a short break, dear listeners. We come back after this.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6%, is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
And as we come back, dear listeners, quickly taking a little bit of a breather. You find yourself here on your number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM, here on your drive time station, The Home Run. We've been looking at the discussion in terms of sort of like, the sense and the logic being applied in terms of, the continued, conferencing and engagements, which is important, because if you look at it from what I have gone and studied and decided to read up on, because I've decided to, like, in the past couple of months to look into propaganda / communication strategies / how this plays in terms of generating national discourse and national conversations, you sometimes also realize primarily that much of this fanfare, this conferencing, this bells and whistles engagements is all about, you know, showing you the activity here in front of your eyes and then sort of like qualifying some sort of a transparency element here to say, we informed the country. We brought all these people here, all these, people who are not celebrities or idols in one way or another. We brought them all here to just legitimize what we're doing here in the public.
Yeah.
However, when you then go and ask a question in terms of, now, will this materialize in some tangible developments? Will you update our national laws on oil and gas? Will you update our laws on the mineral, will you update the Minerals Act? Will you do this? Will you do that? Will you do this? And you continuously get like the question mark responses or the I don't knows or the what are you asking, Dwight? Are you sure you want to ask that question, Dwight? You sometimes get those responses, Hamid, and it's a very interesting thing, because sometimes I either go and observe and I just record,
mm-hmm.
or I sit there and I observe who is saying what, who's representing what entity from the Namibian economy. So this can either be public or private.
Yeah.
If it is a scenario, for example, like with what happened, like what our conversation is based upon, that the green hydrogen program is going to take another phase. It's stepping into an advanced phase, meaning it's moving into a different gear between GIZ, the development agency, and the Enertrag / entities, now going to look at implementation of the hydrogen ramp up initiative. And mind you, Helmut, this is where I love how the Europeans present public-private partnerships. The guy from GIZ literally said, the aim of the German government is to entice and encourage private sector to participate. All the ministers on our side that I've listened, that I've heard, that I've gone to engagements, up to our former presidents, not our current president,
mm-hmm.
our former presidents, they didn't come and say, Owens, asablief, guys, please, let's pull together in the same direction. No, they just said, but we can't do this alone. It is up to the private sector. And I'm literally quoting a sentence. She's now currently the governor of Kavango East. She said that sentence once.
Mm-hmm.
No, not Kavango East. Sorry, Kavango West. Guys, it's not just up to government to do things. It's up to the private sector to also play a part. But you're just telling the private sector to pick up its act. You're telling them literally step up where you're not stepping up as the public sector.
Isn't that why we created a whole public, almost like officiated? It's always been in practice, the public-private partnership discussion from last year.
But exactly, Hamid. But here was the thing: that public-private forum.
Yeah.
Remember, and I'm just now sort of like resuscitating what you and I both observed, was that it seemed like on one side it was the golden ticket for some guys in the private sector to go like, yes, Mm-hmm. You know, let me rub my palms. You know, this we're in the bucket
seat. Time to make money.
This is the opportunity to put my case forward. And it did look like that. Some of the proposals, the comments, and some of the discussions. And even though the president, because she was present for the whole 3 or 4 days that the thing took place, and she keeps, you know, also mentioning back to the public-private forum that it is Namibia's economic landscape is dependent on the public sector and the private sector working together.
Yeah,
but you and I, we've already highlighted what the public sector guys keep saying in terms of why they can't act quick enough. That we've got a procurement act or procurement legislation that is too rigid.
Yep.
Specifically, and I'm sorry for citing my own family here, with my own particular brother at one stage saying that apparently this is a first world piece of legislation for an advanced economy here on a developing country. Helmut, where have you heard of disputes on tendering or procurement, but the disputes are not being resolved? Because it's just counter dispute versus counter dispute, and this contract stands still. That's just what happened with Ministry of Health.
Yeah.
When we highlighted the Auditor General's financial reports, where the Auditor General literally said, but these guys, the Ministry of Health, was busy putting things under emergency procurement that is not classified or covered under the definition in the Act for emergency procurement. Or should be procured under an emergency scenario.
Yeah.
So this meant what, Helmut? This meant either disputes and legal challenges
are taking forever,
or this is actually the particular scenario of if you don't know what your law is supposed to talk to, and you hope and you feel and you hope and you wish that the system, because law is a system, that the system sort of like corrects itself. Law is not that. Law is not a river.
Yeah, one thing that was emphasized in that is it a performance or financial report?
For who?
For the Ministry of Health by the officer.
No, that was a financial one. The one where you read about the emergency procurement scenario.
One of the reasons that was pointed out as to why the Ministry of Health did that, which I think while reading through it, I just came to realize how easy it is if you are not having access to this information to run around shouting corruption. Because if you just read one piece that's talking about how the ministry, and I read a few articles, believe me, on that subject, and a lot of them, unless you basically have to go in detail, if you just read the headline and the first two lines, you just conclude that someone is stealing money.
Yeah.
But the reason behind the emergency procurement, call it the misprocurement, because a lot of things were procured.
Yeah.
Using the emergency procurement procedure, but then the officer of the Auditor General was now criticizing the ministry because their procurement method, you know, and everything that they procured did not qualify. They did not meet the requirement of what constitutes emergency procurement in the public procurement act. So it becomes a very technical issue.
Yeah.
Now, the reason behind all the procurement, you can easily say, okay, it's either someone in the Ministry of Health is stealing money or they don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Maybe one of the, you know, maybe one or two of, or maybe for, you know, one or two of this, one or two of these things are true. But, the reason pointed out, in the report was, disputes.
Yeah.
Yeah. When a tender isn't awarded, anyone that did not win in this case, they can contest. And
yes.
when they are contesting, the whole thing becomes a court case.
Yes.
And they go into your very transparent and very inclusive and very, hear both sides
of the dispute legal system, you now have to put everything on hold and and listen to both sides of the story until the whole thing is ironed out.
Yes.
And then now, if you are in the Ministry of Health at this point, I'm sending you guys a receipt. I mean, an invoice. If you are in that ministry, which is literally working with situations of life and death, you don't have that luxury.
Yep.
You need medication. You don't want it. You need it. So they just decided, okay, you know what? The best way to, you know, before people go and play, you know, Jim and Jack in court to try and determine who should have won the tender, we'll just go through the procurement, you know, emergency procurement, because then we won't have to deal with putting everything on hold to go and listen to who should have won the tender.
Mm.
And the Office of the Auditor General was like, yeah. How do I put this? I think the Office of the Auditor General was just saying in a very politically correct way, what they were trying to say is, your heart was in the right place. But
We're not here to deal with your feelings.
Yeah, I'm sure you meant well, but
we're not here to deal with your feelings, please.
We're here to follow the law.
Please.
And according to this law,
you were supposed to do this regularly.
Yeah, but the question that I would be asking you if I was one of the officials from the Minister of Health would be, should I have waited for someone to die? You know, well, look, I would like to get all this stuff to save your life, but, well, because of the law, I'm sorry,
My
hands are tied. You just have to die.
Or one private sector guy decided to come and dispute things, and now we have to wait for the dispute.
Yeah, let's follow the law. You can die so we can follow the law.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just so you know, this is what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's for a good cause.
You and St. Peter will have a very intense discussion about what I did. And I'm really sorry. It's not your fault.
The only part that I found somewhat very scary is the Oshakati courtroom door where the Parliamentary Standing Committee were now asking the representatives from the judiciary that, are there no other processes? I'm like, huh?
And what did those guys say? Yeah, we are afraid of the procurement act.
Yeah.
Who's going to go call his friend in Oshakati and say, hey, bruh,
just fix the door.
Can you fix the door?
You know,
yeah, I'll send you the invoice.
You know, okay. That's my favorite part?
Yeah.
That was in 2024. When they had that debate, when the guys from the judiciary were like, look, we are not falling for that. We will just follow this law to the T.
Is that a trick question? Is that a trick question?
I know, right?
You're trying to see if I will slip and fall into that trap.
Yeah, it turns out around the same time, the Ministry of Health was busy going emergency procurement. Fast forward to 2025, they were into trouble because...
Well, technically, they were not in trouble.
Yeah, they were not in trouble. Yeah.
Technically speaking, yeah. But it did look...
Yeah, technically. It did look like they were doing something fishy.
Because it did look questionable.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the first time I heard primarily, this was now in 2026 or end of 2025 last year, when the IPPR people went and said, guys, why does it look like we are sitting with a piece of legislation for the procurement from the public service that is technically meant for an advanced economy?
So, in other words, we are a little too, okay, we are light years ahead with our legislations, and
but
we have left development
the
behind.
Yeah, the reality on the ground means that you've got to be a lot more patient.
So, they're supposed to be running parallel to each other.
That's also why I mentioned a little bit earlier, Hamoud. We are not seeing any tangible developments in legislation creation or updating legislation for the oil and gas sector, for the critical rare earth minerals sector of Namibia, for green hydrogen itself. Technically, with green hydrogen, since it's manufacturing, we're supposed to have something completely different. Now, one of the most, I don't want to say farcical explanations I read in the past 3 months up until the date was, or was it at the end of last year when I came back, was from one of the print media, someone in government went and said, yeah, the green hydrogen and what's the other one? What's the other process? And the renewable energy sector will be facilitated for in Namibia's current legislation around resources, minerals and mining as it is. But the fundamental thought was, Helmut, but green hydrogen is not mining.
It's manufacturing. That's one of those technicalities that must be cleared out, I think.
It's under industries. It's under the eye of Ministry of Industries, Mines and Energy. It's under the eye. It's not part of mining. Now, you can understand, primarily, for example, with like the, since Namibia is also part of that critical, what is that? What is that? What is that? That club that the EU or Germany invited us to?
The critical raw material discussion?
Yeah, the critical raw materials club. So since Namibia is also part of that neighborhood now, Helmut, or that particular collection of countries, once again, who brought us there? Germany. Yeah, we got to feel honored, man. Because we definitely would not have had a foot in the door in that discussion.
Yeah.
So since Namibia is also part of that engagement, what does that mean? Do we have a piece of legislation based upon critical raw materials or critical rare earth minerals or critical materials in its essence and its entirety? We have nothing. We're not seeing anything. But yet, when the president did her State of the Nation address last week, I counted the 15, or was it 17 pieces of legislation that are outstanding. 17. And you can hold your breath. You'll probably see St. Peter a lot earlier as well when you do that. Don't expect that law, any of those laws, any of those bills, any of those things to pass through Parliament or the National Assembly this year. I'll say it with a straight
face. No, not this year.
Don't expect it. Do not expect it to go through this year, because
I think I'm counting on either one or two.
Helmut, not even the Land Act, because even then we showed how even the, do you know what's happening with the Land Act, Helmut?
Yeah.
Do you know? Okay. Under the discussion of the Land Bill, not the Land Act. So when we did the Land Bill last year on the home run here, the concern that you and I immediately identified was that this thing is taking us off the actual subject matter of the need for land. Because the actual need for land in Namibia is the need for housing. It's not the need for farming. We can clearly see through NSA statistics that there's more people moving to the urban centers, because the urban centers are supposed to provide services and are supposed to provide much of the needed, and they need labor for these services that they're providing. Because more people will just come and stay. People will have babies. People will live close to these urban centers because they are schools and they are hospitals. And unfortunately, the Ministry of Health and what's the other ministry's name? They're not going to go build a hospital there somewhere in the bush for the fun of it. They're not going to do that. They're not going to do that. Even with, for example, the plans, these Omaheke guys, these Rosatom guys, they literally plan to pump a whole bunch of money into that that rural town, Leonardville. Helmut, the government will say yes, thank you. They will definitely say yes, thank you. You know why? Because for 36 years, the regional government of Omaheke didn't have the resources to scale up a farm town like Leonardville. So, and Leonardville, remember, there was Combat was one of those particular mining towns. Tsumeb was an old mining town. Wamitas is a farm here between Namibia, between Windhoek and Rehoboth. Wamitas is a farm. Kolmanskop, the ghost town outside Ludrits, was a mining town.
That's one of those painful examples of
what happens when the resource just
when the resource ran out.
Yeah, up and up where I went to is, it's now a farm, but it was literally a thriving town. A town below the ground, a town above ground. It was a thriving town. There were schools.
Below ground?
I told you, Mos. They had a jail below
ground. Oh, yeah.
They had a clinic or an emergency medical facility below ground. They had a makeshift court with a magistrate and police below ground, so that if you committed something below ground, you get processed pretty quickly and you get set on the way to Tsumeb or to Grootfontein. You get shipped out.
Jeez.
You get shipped out. Now, ask yourself, Helmut, 2020, where are we now? 2026. What I'm explaining to you happened in 1912, we are sitting with a discussion of, we have the templates, we know what is going on, we've got to see actual, you know, actual tangible results starting to manifest. So far, if you're talking about a race, the race is so far being won by the renewable guys.
Mm-hmm.
Because all the green hydrogen guys will do is they will end, is they will just convince the other renewable guys, which are the independent power producers around the country, they will convince those guys at playing another a major part in energy production across the country. So when we have to see the power to X principle take effect, yes, Helmut, Namibia is on the cusp. Probably by next year, probably by 2028, we will start producing synthetic fuels. Because that's what Europe wants. Europe is not interested in this fairy tale that we're running here in off the south coast of Namibia.
Yeah,
because now, the oil is already on land.
Now, even the whole, you know, like, just, okay, we don't have a refinery.
No, we don't.
Who is going to refine the oil? That's one of those questions that will basically point at...
one of the plans,
yeah,
was the MOU that Alwendo signed with his counterpart from Zambia to connect, to build, firstly,
mm-hmm,
a pipeline,
uh-huh,
from Oranjemund to Zambia. I sat here, I still did the business and economic segment that night. I sat here and I was like, in between there are mines, in between there are mountains, in between are towns, in between is a whole bunch of protected areas. In between are hazardous conditions.
That's a little too far. Before you even get there.
There's that massive pipeline from in North America, from Canada through to the United States. The one that the Native American authority,
mm-hmm,
the one outside Chicago in the state of Illinois, they won was the court case. That massive pipeline was going to run from Canada through the United States into, I think, Texas or where they've got refining processes. But the aim was that it was to help with the United States' gas needs. The U.S. needed more gas.
Oh.
Now, sometimes what I also discovered, what the U.S. does, the U.S. imports to resell.
Yeah, they do.
Not like what Namibia does. Namibia tells Zambia, hey, yeah, you can drive with your whole truck of copper through us. But then Namibia doesn't sell it. Namibia records it as a transaction Namibia supposedly had.
Huh?
Helmut, if you actually go look at who's the biggest copper producer in Southern Africa,
uh-huh,
it's Zambia.
Yeah.
It's Zambia.
Yeah. They literally have a place called the Copper Belt.
Yeah.
Now, and a lot of it underground, yeah.
Now, Namibia does still produce copper. We still do produce copper.
Yeah.
But when you look at the copper statistics, the actual copper statistics, nah, and you look at, for example, the copper stats that come through from what the NSA measures, and globally, and since you and I know it's quicker for the Zambians to drive it through to Walvis,
mm-hmm,
than for them to drive it through to Tanzania, then, because you can see the trucks in our roads, the Zambian,
yeah,
trucks,
yeah,
you can see them on the way to Walvis, to the coast. Then you got to ask yourself, how do we record this thing coming into our country? Like manganese. Manganese is also recorded on our statistics. But manganese comes through from the North Cape in South Africa, over the Orange River, to Lüderitz. Manganese and what's the other? You need manganese and what's the other one's name? And cobalt. Manganese and cobalt. So, I ask you again, Helmut. How do these trade statistics get recorded? And why potentially is that this particular trade statistic funny business? I won't say discrepancy, because discrepancy is almost like making an accusation. Yeah. But this funny business.
That a funny business, I don't have an answer to that. But I'm still, I'm now in, headfirst in this whole oil and gas discussion. And that's interest-based, you know, on the interest side of things.
Yeah.
Now, because first of all, this whole setup, one thing I know about multinational corporations is that they have an army of lawyers, an army of engineers, and basically everyone to basically get the ball rolling on anything that they're putting their money into. So obviously, you know, as we speak, while we are still 9-10 years to production phase, if they haven't ready, they're sorting out what grade of, you know, what grade of oil is going to be extracted in that part, and where is it going to be refined? So obviously they are already, if they have, you know, if they haven't already, they are in the process of working on which company is going to process it and who is going to transport it from where it's being drilled to where it's being oiled. There are multiple entities involved. That means there are a lot of entities, multinational, that are involved from extractive to transporting to refining.
Yeah.
So that brings up a whole lot of interest-based discussion, you know, basically taking a triumph over environmental and energy transition discussions.
Yep.
And we saw that at home with the mines and the, you know, mines and the tourism, a report over what should we do if we find some very, you know, lucrative resources underground, while on the surface is some, you know, is a tourist area that has a, you know, plant and animal species that is unique to Namibia, and it has a significant, you know, tourist, or more like a, you know, value for the Ministry of Tourism. But if we compare the money underground is more than the money being generated on the surface. Even though the one that's being generated on the surface can take you into infinite, and the one that's underground is basically finite. And the language coming out of that document was basically saying, oh, we're going to drill, baby, drill.
We are, Helmut, and that's why I highlighted specifically.
Yeah.
What I've so far seen and assessed between how the Europeans, specifically the EU, and in European investor organizations here in Namibia, what they've done is, Helmut, they come to you open cards. They tell you, Helmut, I'm going to buy your house. Mm-hmm. Helmut, I'm going to buy your dog. I'm going to buy your cat. I'm going to finance your kids' school and education. I'm going to own your life. In a very soft, gentle voice. They're going to put it like that.
Mm-hmm.
There's not going to be any Reservoir Dogs-ish kind of, you know, bells and whistles and drama. No. They're going to come to you and they say, listen, guys.
Mm-hmm.
We believe Namibia is the place to show the world a country can move completely away from fossil fuels,
mm-hmm,
and being dependent upon fossil fuels. And this country is going to be the number one leader in fossil fuel, in green energy production,
mm-hmm,
for the future, for the fuel source of the future. Because remember, Japan wants energy, Helmut. And one of the offtake agreements, like I said, one is South Korea, one is Japan. The Japanese are going to buy it.
Look, I totally understand why we are confused in terms of, you know.
We're not
energy.
Confused.
First of all, oh, we are big time.
No. You've got to multiply your confusion by 1,000.
Yeah, look, the reason behind that is, again, like I pointed out earlier, in our defense as a land of the brave, broke but brave, is is one of, we have resources that a lot of multinationals from developed, we basically have two different types of, like, two main types of resources that are all very important to the, you know, to the energy discussion. And that's one is emphasizes renewable energy, and energy transition. You know, in line with every energy transition agreement and climate change agreement that we have signed from the Paris, from the 2015 Paris agreements, to all, you know, the whole nine yards. And one is in the oil and gas discussion. Except all, you know, all these, you know, all these two categories of, you know, of energy investment that's taking place in, that's dominating Namibia's energy investment.
Yeah.
Especially by foreign investors. It's being done by institutions or more like multinationals from the same countries that are also, that are also participants to the, you know, to the energy transition. Now, these are the, well, these are the guys that are telling us, you know what, move away from oil and gas. And also, coming and investing into, you know, into oil and gas. Now, for, I mean, we have the resources at this point. We are going, we don't understand your point, but sure, we have the resources. You have the money. Yeah, why the heck?
And that's unfortunately the thing, Amut. That is unfortunately the thing.
And yeah, and we were very excited, you know, before. Look, man, that's this is the most painful thing about this whole, you know, Namco scandal.
Yeah.
10 years to production. You already have a Range Rover with a license plate, customer license plate. That's just a little too fast. That's like someone, you know, a hot girl asking for my number, and I'm already buying a wedding ring. Like, seriously, dude. And that's a little too fast. Just to breathe. Just, you know, go easy. Just have a, you know, a little faith. But that's more often in the comedy world, we like to make fun of last born that you just, you know, that's their mentality to relationships. Yeah. You ask a last born, you ask them for their number. They're already going, I feel pregnant. There's a last born somewhere in.
Did that really happen, Amut?
There's a last born somewhere in what region is it? Now I'm gonna get mad at twice.
just mention it.
No, totally for.
Just mention it, Amut. Why are you mumbling?
I don't wanna get mad at. There's a last born somewhere in the north. For some reason, I like to make, you know, fun of firstborns because I'm the firstborn. Because, you know, firstborns, we are like,
I usually cite lastborn mentality or lastborn attitude. You know, when they complain.
Firstborns are parents junior.
Yeah, but they also are very, what do you call that thing? They've got very short patience, what do you call it? They're very, in some cases, when it comes to when they see someone that acts like a prima donna or like a lastborn.
Yeah.
They're very short tempered with them. Because I can clearly see that this person is probably being spoiled or acting spoiled.
Yeah. And we were the experiment. Like look, my take on firstborns has always been, we were the experiments on how to raise a child.
Mm.
Our parents had no clue what they were doing. They were just swinging it. Now, by the time that they go to child number 3, 4, they already figured out how to raise a child, which was, most of us are traumatized. Lastborns are mostly, you know, spoiled.
I'm not a last born, look, but my sister has told me that.
Oh, yeah. Look, first borns, you get to a point where, like, you know, sometimes I, you know, I just look at my parents and, you know, the things that my younger brother is able to get away with, today would have gotten me killed.
Mm.
And I'm like, what happened to you guys? And I came across a word, you know, one just video that on TikTok that answered my question. And, you know, you, as a parent, you get to the age where you stop, you know, raising child and start fighting, you know, your way into heaven. Now you have to be nice, you know.
Amut, where are we going with that point? As a parent.
The older you get, the more you see, you know. You realize that heaven is more important than raising children, so you just spoil them.
Yeah.
So you can work your way. You're going to be nice.
Yeah.
Now, several things that comes out of any, you know, okay, you know, several things that comes out of the discussion in terms of local content. you know, like, how is it going to benefit an ordinary Namibian? From, you know, from, okay, from the infrastructure alone, and where everything is going to be made, like the final product. Unfortunately for us, one, the oil and gas is offshore, one. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, we have it. Unfortunately, it's offshore. About 300 kilometers offshore.
Yeah.
And
3 kilometers below the surface.
Three kilometers from the seabed to where the oil is.
Yeah.
Jeez. Now, the thing is, that means, it's what we are witnessing right now. Like what's happening is that the oil and gas is progressing faster. Green hydrogen, initiative is progressing faster than the oil and gas.
Mm.
Yeah. And also the oil and gas, everything is, the process of manufacturing is going to be taking place here. That would be, if you ask me, that would be the equivalent of refining here.
Mm.
Except the refining taking place here, that's one of those things that we still have to wait and see. But I wouldn't put my money on us having a refinery.
I also don't think so. Even though Iran probably, you know, without Iran discussion two years back, it was tantalizing. But then I remembered the MOU with the pipeline to
Zambia.
To Zambia. And I was like, okay, that's out of the window until something happened. And so far, no one has come close to, what you call that? Resurrect the discussion regarding a refinery.
Okay.
Remember, we signed an MOU.
The problem with that pipe discussion is, you're talking about, this is not a horse pipe. The point I'm making is, it's ridiculously expensive. You will just need another foreign investor to invest in it.
Yes. To build it?
Yep.
To coordinate past the various mountains in Namibia?
For both you and Zambia.
Yeah.
And this is not to be, you know, to look down on Zambians in terms of their investment capabilities, but I'm making that point in reference to the Lupita Corridor Group. Like you just pointed out, someone pointed that out, that if you look at the economic capacity in terms of natural resources in these three countries, Zambia, DRC, and Angola, they would have made enough money to build that pipe, you know, that railway themselves.
Yep.
But they didn't.
They didn't. So
poor Joe Biden had to fly to Angola to make everything more diplomatically nice.
Tell Angola, hey, don't worry, my guy. Don't worry. Don't worry. When I sign it, it's yours.
Yeah.
Don't worry. Just calm down.
Yeah. Just know that I'm here because the guys that paid for my campaign, you know, told me to be here.
We got you.
That's
man.
One thing. That's one of the reasons why I'm being reluctant to listen to politicians these days.
Why? What happened?
90% of the times they are representing the guys that paid for the campaign.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Just like I discovered a particular thing that I came back from now.
That's why I laugh every time I'm watching mainstream media and someone says, so they bring in an expert and the first question is, what do you think Donald Trump is going to do next? I'm like, really?
You have to ask the expert about why are you sitting here?
Yeah.
Well, I was paid to fly here.
What's going on in Donald Trump's mind? My first question would be like, here's a mind. But
really,
we have to be diplomatically correct.
Yes.
Yeah, right. Of course we have to.
Diplomatically, not politically. We sit with a funny scenario, Helmut, because just like I also highlighted, the high seas is not a friendly environment. It's not as stable as the land. When it comes to looking at things where hydrogen production will be on the surface of the earth. I just now quickly read something while you were highlighting there the last bone analysis or analogy that you were proposing there to us. There's a guy from the US, Steve Forbes, who highlighted now apparently that Earth's environmental disaster will come about because of the alternative energy sources. But everything that he is citing as problem areas or as, you know, the current threats and the current weaknesses that exist, in the global energy supply is literally because Europe and the UK deliberately said we're going to phase away from fossil fuel. Now, his argument is primarily based upon the world should push and consume more fossil fuel. And then the next particular threat that he cites is the war there in the Middle East, which is another political thing. The first one is also political, but political economic. The second one is political with very small economic influence, but its backlash is economic global. And I immediately just clicked away from this article while you were still on the last born analysis and, you know, potentially someone in the far north.
Making fun of people that have the capacity to murder me.
Yeah. So when we sit with certain particular scenarios also, Helmut, where we've got to look at the discourse taking place around the world, the first question you've got to ask yourself is, does Namibia need oil today? Not oil to refine. Does Namibia need the oil products, diesel, petrol, and the other particular, you know, petroleum derivatives? Yes, we do.
Yeah, today I would say a very big yes.
Yes, very big yes. I agree. 10 fingers in the Bible. You know, you we can go there. But in the future, is it going to be sustainable? Then you sit with, I don't knows. With, yeah, we really don't know. And most of economic planning, Helmut, is literally based upon, okay, what will a new president say? Or what is going to be next year's focus by the government with the next State of the Nation address, the next budget announcement, the next opening of the parliament session? Those three things, Helmut, are the key things in Namibia's economic planning. Those three events. We didn't have the State of the Nation address last year. But we had a parliament opening, but it was actually the inauguration. We didn't actually have parliament. Yeah, we did have a parliament opening, but it was actually somehow a little bit subdued because the court case was still taking place. So those three events will tell any economic planner, which is a business owner or business operator, what they need to look forward to in the coming financial year of the government's financial year. So, in essence, Helmut, we have to ask the particular question. Does Namibia like wars impacting its economy? No, Namibia doesn't like it. It makes things difficult.
No country likes that.
Because the South Africans are paying $34, I think, for a liter of petrol. I don't know what it is for diesel, but they're making a whole bunch of ads. I sent Helmut one of the ads, apparently. No, not apparently. I did send him the ad. Where the guy told the petrol jockey, please don't fill up the car, fill up my perfume bottle. You know, I've got to put the petrol on me so that all the men in the neighborhood can come and push my car. So you know, we've got situations like that. Then the next scenario then spills into a very ugly one, Helmut, because here's the thing. What this person's argument, this Steve Forbes, I suspect he's the person that owns Forbes, the media platform. What he forgets to outline, because he's making the case for fossil fuel. He's not making the case for energy mix of any kind. He's not even making the case for helping the developed countries achieve their climate goals or try and become economically resilient. He's doing the classic thing that most American planners do. They outline or they advertise or they promote the advanced economy exceptionalism mindset, meaning for us to stay relevant, we have to use this fuel. It's always it's always a scenario of take it or leave it. You either die trying or you be successful. Things like that. It's always a scenario like that. It's always analyses like that. But when you look at the world that has a whole tranche of scientists that helps it make decisions, like the IPCC, one billionaire now comes and says, we are enhancing our climate disaster issues. But there's a whole collection of scientists that we even have here in Southern Africa. The South Africans also did it last year when I went to that particular conference that where they brought in the South Africans and the other Southern Africans across the region. And what I heard there was a discussion of, let's generate our own knowledge. We have time.
Oh boy.
There's a future here in Southern Africa to do this, to enhance our scientific planning, our scientific capacity build development. Oh, that, I just kept hearing that, Helmut. But I've got to listen to one billionaire from the United States talk about Southern Africa. So in a nutshell, primarily, billionaires have been somewhat problematic. But yeah.
That's not surprising. Especially.
No, they'll never be surprising.
That'll never be surprising.
Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with them being a billionaire.
It's the ego that comes with the money.
It's what they say. It's what they say.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But before we actually continue, we quickly take a short break, guys. We quickly go for a live read. The Vichy University for the 2026 July applications that are now open for the Faculty of Health Sciences for the Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing, Level 8. Admission requirements for candidates are as follows. Candidates must have a recognized nursing qualification at NQF level 7 or higher level from any recognized higher learning institution. Candidates must be registered as a nurse or a midwife with the Nursing Council of Namibia or the Health Professions Council of Namibia. Candidates must have a minimum of 2 years working experience as a nurse or midwife in any health facility. And candidates must be able to write a short essay describing the motivation for pursuing the postgraduate diploma in community health nursing. Qualification duration is 1 year. Mode of delivery will be full-time. For more information, please call 081-403-6406. Velvicha University, where everyone is an achiever.
You know, what's more clear when it comes to these two divisions of energy investment is obviously when it comes to local content.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think green hydrogen is going to dominate in that one.
No, it will, Hamad.
Yeah.
I see more benefit.
Because, for one, it's happening faster.
But I see more benefit, Hamad.
That too. But look, that's because the processing is taking place here.
Yeah, but it's happening in our face.
Yeah, but for oil and gas, you'll have to build a refinery, which I hardly doubt we're going to do. And if there's no refinery, that means the refining, and basically, which also counts as part of value addition, which is a whole industry that factors into the discussion of employment creation. If it's not taking place here, it's taking place somewhere else. That means it's creating employment somewhere else.
Yeah.
While the green hydrogen discussion, or more like the whole production, it's taking place here. If the production is taking place here, the employment creation and local content and everything is taking place here.
Mm.
So now you are in high school. You are in high school.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or you just graduated high school and you find yourself in a vocational. Making plans of, I have to, I'm good with my hands. That's one thing I'm good with my hands, not very much into the whole academic way of doing things. So, there are two main, spheres of, foreign investment taking place, which are dominating the discussion with regards to investment. And they're both in energy, oil and gas, green hydrogen. What am I going to, if you are offered to basically pick one, are you going to venture in the direction of skills that will give you green hydrogen related, related knowledge or oil and gas related knowledge?
Yeah.
That's a dilemma. For one, well, oil and, if you look at the speed with at which things are taking place, green hydrogen is killing it. Green hydrogen is sprinting. Oil and gas, oh boy, that's a marathon.
Well, those that love promoting that marathon, Helmut, let them promote the marathon. Let them Let them...
Look, it's a good marathon.
I don't see the marathon ending, Hamoud. That's why I'm sounding like a broken record. You know, because let them, you know.
It's a good marathon.
Let them run.
That we managed to, well, we had the resources. Someone came with the money. We were like, woo, sure, go ahead, man. Commercial break. Get so
much more. You get so much more with the ShopRite price because we buy in bulk and pass the savings on to you. Save on 2 kg crystal gold parboiled rice, only $29.99. 2.5 kg best choice pure white sugar, just $49.99. And 5 kg top score super maize meal for a low $62.99. Deals valid until 19 April 2026. Get so much more with the ShopRite price.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why do you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6%, is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Two minutes into the hour of six, and the discussion comes to an end. Now, you know, it makes it very difficult to give someone career advice if they want to venture into, well, one of these two. Should you go with, should I go with oil and gas?
I'll just stay in media. I'm sorry, I'll just stay where I am.
Should I go with?
Probably expand into an honors here, you know,
no,
master's
what?
There, but that's as far as you can go, because definitely I won't be becoming a mechanic of any sort today.
Same here. I've come to realize that...
it's a harsh reality.
Handy things, not my thing. Yeah. Plus, I've used an angle grinder before, and I kept picturing what would happen if my finger gets close to it. Worse. A different finger, so I decided, you know what, this is not mine.
Why, Helmut? Why?
Until tomorrow, why, same time, same Helmut, place, on your favorite radio
did
station.
You do that to me? Anyway, guys, let's see each other same time, same place again tomorrow. Enjoy the rest of your evening in our company. Stay tuned for the next program after the break.
Why? That's because it's kind of difficult to explain to the madam. Until tomorrow.
Who plays with an angle grinder?
Accidents happen at work, right?
Oops.